Vakam, aham hi sarva yajnanam, bhokta cha prabhur eva cha, natumam abhijananti, tatve natash shyavantite.
Whatever a man may sacrifice to other gods, O son of Kunti, is really meant for me alone. But it is offered without true understanding. I am the only enjoyer and the only object of sacrifice. Those who do not recognize me, my true transcendental nature, fell down. In effect, Krishna says, persons engaged in the worship of demigods are not very intelligent, although such worship is indirectly offered to me. For example, when a man pours water on the leaves and branches of a tree without pouring water on the root, he does so without sufficient knowledge or without observing regulative principles. The process of watering a tree is to pour water on the root. Similarly, the process of rendering service to different parts of the body is to supply food to the stomach. The demigods are, so to speak, different officers and directors in the government of the Supreme Lord. One has to follow the laws made by the government, not by the officers or directors. Similarly, everyone is to offer his worship to the Supreme Lord only. That will automatically satisfy the different officers and directors of the Lord. The officers and directors are engaged as a representative of the government, and to offer some bribe to the officers and directors is illegal. This is stated in Bhagavad Gita as avidipurvakam. In other words, Krishna does not approve the unnecessary worship of the demigods. In Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that there are many types of yajna performance recommended in the Vedic literatures, but actually all of them are meant for satisfying the Supreme Lord. Yajna means Vishnu. In the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, it is clearly stated that one should work only for satisfying yajna or Vishnu. The perfectional form of human civilization, known as Varnashrama Dharma, is specifically meant for satisfying Vishnu. Therefore, Krishna says, I am the enjoyer of all sacrifices because I am the Supreme Master. However, less intelligent persons, without knowing this fact, worship demigods for temporary benefit. Therefore, they fell down to material existence and do not achieve the desired goal of life. If, however, anyone has any material desire to be fulfilled, he had better pray for it to the Supreme Lord, although that is not pure devotion, and he will thus achieve the desired result. Although Hiranyakashipu offered his obeisances unto Lord Brahma, he was strongly inimical towards Lord Vishnu. This is the symptom of an asura. Asuras worship the demigods as being separate from the Lord, not knowing that all the demigods are powerful because of being servants of the Lord. If the Supreme Lord were to withdraw the powers of the demigods would no longer be able to offer obeisances to benedictions to their worshippers. The difference between a devotee and a non-devotee or asura is that a devotee knows that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and that everyone derives power from him. Without worshipping the demigods for particular powers, a devotee worships Lord Vishnu, knowing that if he desires a particular power, he can get that power while acting as Lord Vishnu's devotee. Therefore, in the Shastra, Bhagavatam 2.3.10, it is recommended. Akama sarva kamo va moksha kama udaradi tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. A person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of material desires, free from material desires, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Whole, the Personality of Godhead. Even if a person has material desires, instead of worshipping the demigods, he should pray to the Supreme Lord, for that his connection with the Supreme Lord will be established and he will be saved from becoming a demon or a non-devotee. In this regard, Śrīla Madhvācārya gives the following quotation from the Brahmatarka.
Ekastānaika karyatvāt viṣṇo pradhānayantastatata jīvasyatat adhīnātvām nabhinā dikritam vachaha.
Since Vishnu is the supreme, by worshipping Vishnu, one can fulfill all one's desires. There is no need to divert one's attention to any demigod.
So, here, Śrīla Prabhupāda points out the very important point about devotional service we heard about, but actually how to perform devotional service, and he points out how not to perform devotional service, or what not to do, even though we may think it is devotional service. Right? So, it's very significant that we understand the principles, as mentioned in the Padma Purana. Right? Always remember Krishna and never forget Krishna. So now, if we always remember Krishna, then there is no need for any other rules to be applied, because we always remember Krishna. However, if there are some times when we do not remember Krishna, so then at the time the rules applies, the regulations, never forget him. So, in the stage of Nishkama Bhakti, then yes, person always remember Krishna. The devotee always remember. He does everything perfectly. So there's no problem. Now, on the stage of Sakama, when he engages that his mind intelligence, he dovetails that in devotional service. So at that time, then we have to be very careful that actually we are doing what we are supposed to do. So why the bhakti? These are the rules and regulations which we have to follow, and then there are also instructions which we have to follow. So the instruction, always chant the holy name, Shravanam Kirtanam, in the association of devotees. This is the instruction. That's how we achieve Krishna. Following the regulative principles, the four regulative principles which we promise to follow during the initiation, they prevent us from falling down. So when we are not remembering Krishna, we should remember not to fall for the illicit activities. That's the meaning. So now, Śrīla Prabhupāda is giving here, Bhagavatam is giving nice example of Hiraṇyakaśipu. He performed such a great austerity. But what for? He performed the austerity, and it was material activity, to gain some more material benefits. There was not a tinge of devotional service in his activity. Therefore, it was all useless, even though it lasted a very long time.
So, now, what is the point? One can be laboring not so much, and at the end, when there is no, when the result of such labor is not devotion for Krishna, it's useless. It's completely useless. So here, we got a nice example, and then we see, okay, even though it's so impressive, right, and he meditates, and now he was so focused that he could meditate on and let the, his prana, the life earth, flowing in his bones, so then the ants actually, they ate all his flesh. And he was covered, he was in an anthill, but still alive. Unbelievable, but true. It's possible. So much of pain he must go through, so much of austerity. But actually, he didn't do any sacrifice. Because sacrifice, yagya, is meant only for the Supreme Lord. It was all for himself, for nobody else. So asking boons of demigods just for getting some more material benefit gives temporary result, and even though he tried to be immortal, he failed. He was killed anyway. So no benefit. So now, rather than acting this way, rather than trying to be too smart to get some material benefits, then Srila Prabhupada mentions, do you have some material desires? Okay, it's all right. Approach the Lord. That's sakama. Do it. If you really want, okay, you want to do some activity. All right. So then Krishna says, well, you perform the activity, but offer the results to me. So the activity is yours. But the results offer to Krishna. Right? Like, you want to enjoy some nice prasad. You want to enjoy some nice pizza, whatever it is. It's for you. You cook it because you like it. But at least offer it to Krishna. Krishna will accept it. It's bhakti. But you cannot say that you did it with love and devotion because Krishna loves it the most. It's also bhakti. But it's your desire. So Krishna gives the opportunity. You can fulfill your desires and still elevate yourself in Krishna consciousness. But if you don't care about Krishna, if you don't do the last part, offering the results of these activities to Krishna, then you get no benefit. That's not sakama, that's not bhakti. So, for example, see Dhruva Maharaj. Now, he, at the beginning, he had very, very strong material desires. What did he want? Nothing much, just kingdom bigger than Brahma's. So to rule place not bigger than universe. And his stepmother to die because he was upset with her. So with this material desires, he went. And he was approached by Narada Muni, and he tricked him actually into chanting the holy names, but still with the material desires in his mind, he was performing service. But because he was so focused, he actually did attract the attention of the Lord, because he was so focused on the Lord. So then the material desires became secondary. And when the Lord appeared to him, then immediately he forgot. He didn't want any of that. And then the Lord said, I know you don't want it, but still you get it. Because you wanted it. So, and that was your reason for performing these austerities, actually the sacrifice, performing devotional service. So because of that, I'll give it to you. The Lord has nothing to lose. He can give to the devotees whatever he wants. So Dhruva Maharaj did get it. But in the state of being pure devotee, he was lamenting. Lamenting for what? How foolish he was that he approached the Lord for material desires. Even though he became purified, still later on he lamented. And Srila Prabhupada in that purport, he does mention, if you don't want to lament like Dhruva Maharaj, you should not approach the Lord for material desires. But again, if you do have material desires, there's nobody else you can approach than the Lord. You approach demigods, that's forbidden. You won't get the benefit of performing devotional service. So, at least what we should try, that the material desires which we have are not the prominent ones. We should try, in association of devotees, try to develop, rather focusing on loving service to the Lord. How we can perform bhakti, and in the process, alright, then some enjoyment may come, but we should not make it as a prominent part. Otherwise, then the suffering will come. The lamentation will come. In the process, when the jiva becomes purified and seeing, you know, how actually the jiva got purified, then there will be a regret, maybe not regret, but definitely feeling of how low did we go to approach the Lord, who is full of rasa, who is full of affection for us, just out of material desires. Now we don't think about it. Now we think the Lord is our servant. I want, he has to provide. If he doesn't provide, I become angry. Kama, krodha, lobha, right? Greedy. I want it. Moha, mada, matsarya. So we become mad after getting what we want. Dissatisfied. But still, we won't get it. If the Lord doesn't sanction, we don't get. We don't get, and we still feel that we deserve it, we get lost. In the thoughts that, how come I want and I don't get? I am the Lord, I am the controller. Well, obviously not. So this is the point, that how do we actually control the desire? How do we figure out then what is right and what is wrong thing to desire? Right? That if we want something material, we should know then it's inferior way, but still there is a way how to perform devotional service, how to perform bhakti. We should do it based on Guru Sadhu Shastra. We should not go, well, okay, I know I am attached, I know I have desires, but I'll pretend I'm pure devotee. So others will think that I have no desires, but secretly I will not fulfill my desires, but others will not worship me as a pure devotee. And by that time, then I'm sure I will get purified. So I don't have to follow any rules and regulations which Guru tells me to do. That's the way of Sahaj. Sahajiyas, it, I mean, they can look very impressive, but it's not real. It's fake. So if you don't want to fall for that, then we should not go that way. So how do we... Okay, now this is a question. How do we control our desires? How do we... How do we control our desires? Huh? Okay, how do you do that? Okay, that's there. You can still maintain your material desire. You want more and more and this and that. How do you control that that part that you stop wanting more and more? Is it for Krishna? It's easy to say that it's for Krishna. I want the latest Mercedes for Krishna. No. I want the big house for Krishna. I will make small altar for him there, but I will enjoy the house. Is it for Krishna? Right. So where is the guidance? Okay. But there are, say, some disciples, they come and they approach the spiritual master. Gurudev, look, I feel like I was thinking maybe I should get married. Oh, really? No. So, what do you think? No, it's not the best. No, but I think I will need it. So, please, what do you think? Okay, then if you want, we can think about it. All right, please, can you come tomorrow for the marriage? Some approach their guru like that. Anyway, but okay, guidance. Yes, you said it. Guru's guidance. We follow the instructions of one's guru. But there is one quality which, if we follow, things will become easier for us. Huh? Yes, that's there. But how do you think like that? I am the servant of the Lord, but I want this, I want that. Anyway, in Shikshastakam, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then he is giving four qualities, right? These four qualities enables us then to chant the holy name purely, right? Trinadapi Sunichana, Tarurapi Sahishnana, Amanina and Manadena. Now if these four qualities are in place, then yes, the devotee can chant the holy name without disturbance. So, how do we develop tolerant, humble, not expecting anything not from anyone, but giving respect to everyone else? Now, if we say, okay, being tolerant is, you can practice, but it becomes difficult. Right? Humble. Ay, Prabhuji, yeah, I really know, I want to pay obeisance. It can become, also practiced, but it won't be really, real until it's internal. Giving respect to others, it's also difficult as such to practice, because we can do, and it will have some effect. But there's one quality which we can practice with greater efficiency, because it's about ourselves. We can do it, and that's amanina. Don't expect that things are there for you. Don't expect that you are the controller. So learn to accept whatever comes. Krishna provides something for you. Just take it. Don't ask for more. But I won't. Okay. You won't get. If you start endeavoring too much, then becomes atyahara. I want more. Like, okay, you go for prasad. You get the plate of prasad. Oh, I'm hungry. But prasad is finished. Okay, so I have to go around and then look for places where there is prasad. You can spend another hour or two to find something. You may not get anything. But those 2 hours, nobody will give you back. If you just take it, well, okay, I got my share. I'm not going to die. And in this heat, maybe it's not good for me to eat too much. So, okay, I'll be happy. And you can go on with your devotional activities instead of running after what you want. So, practicing to accept what comes for yourself, it's out of the four, it's the easiest. Now, if you practice actually and you develop this quality, then it becomes easier for one to be tolerant, to become humble, to give respect to others. And that way, then one is qualified to chant the holy name. That way, one will be qualified to perform pure devotional service. It's not difficult. So now for that reason, then Srila Prabhupada is also mentioning that many times, practice the Brahminical culture. Right? Even though the Brahminical culture still, it's material, but it's closest to spiritual. Because the Brahmanas have the quality that they are satisfied with whatever comes. So that's the Vaishnava culture. Understanding that everything comes for Krishna. So when it comes, you should understand, okay, this is my quota. And you don't have to spend time and endeavor for more. So that's the beauty of it. That's the simplicity of the devotional service. Now, if we practice that, then we will be closer to be able to understand and to perform pure devotional service. So now, this can be practiced. But again, it cannot be really, or it's very difficult to practice it alone. We need the association of devotees. We need to be affectionate to each other. We need to see how we can help each other. Then we can all progress. But if we are thinking that we are on our own, practicing here, and this one is not good enough, and I cannot, we are unable to take proper association, then we are the losers. So, being affectionate, no. Being understanding that if you help someone and that someone becomes maybe better than you. Now, the false ego may get hurt. Right? No. I helped him and then he became better than me, and then now one may feel agitated because of that. On the material platform, maybe, because he gets better position, he gets better facility, and because of that, our ego suffers. But on the spiritual platform, it's not like that. When we are able to help someone, and that someone becomes more elevated than we are, we actually can take advantage of that, of his association, and elevate ourselves. That's the real meaning of how we can elevate ourselves. So not by trying to put each and everyone down, because the modern education is about that. You are the best. And you have to climb up to the top by stepping on everybody's head. You have to fight. Only then you can become the best. So it's a fight. But it should not be. We don't want, and there is no necessity in devotional service to perform something like this. Devotional service is there for everyone. Everybody can go back to Godhead if they desire. So we have to control our desires. And to do that through Amanina, it will be easier in association. Try to help each other. And by helping each other, it also means helping our children. You see, now the society is not doing so well. Second generation of children, they are supposed to be elevated, interested in Krishna consciousness, doing so many great activities. But what's happening with most of the children of the devotees? Not interested. Performing illicit activities. Many are lost. So, what happened? What was wrong? What did we do wrong? I chanted my rounds. How come that the kid was born like that? It's his fault, not my fault. Is it? I have heard one devotee, he Agriyasta, and then he ran away from his wife without proper reason. So now he was going around and justifying how actually she was bad, it's her fault. So it satisfies his ego. But it's nothing of substance. Now, there are examples, okay. The husband now leaves the wife, but for a reason. And then, when he gives up any idea on getting into marriage again, then okay, then he can elevate himself in devotional service, he can now be a great devotee. But with that idea, knowing that he is guilty, and then his lust may not be satisfied, so he will be looking for somebody else. There's no way how we can develop really pure devotion. No way. So we should try to develop, you know, these qualities in ourselves, and we should see that we protect our children so they are not exposed to all the nonsense, because once exposed, the innocence is lost and it's irreversible. There's no way how we can gain, no. What's the opposite of innocence? Non-innocence, right? You cannot erase the innocence or the. Once innocence is lost, it cannot be regained. So you expose by your activities, by your negligence, your children to some illicit activities. The child is lost. And the fault is not his, but yours. Even though the suffering is mainly his. So therefore, being a parent is very responsible activity. Chanakya Pandit talks about, don't become a teacher, a guru, a king, or a father if you cannot bring your subjects back to Godhead. So, that's how serious it is. So then, we should very, very carefully think about it. And not think that anyway I can do now whatever I want, and the kid, he will naturally do whatever he wants, he will choose, and that this is the nature, so I'll be liberal and then I'll let him do. He wants to have sex with the girl, okay, no problem, at least he will learn, right? At least not a boy. No, all this nonsense actually is going on. And this is how we take care of our children. Of course it's going to be Varna Sankara. The children will be lost. So now, what can we do? Well, at least we should endeavor, to take care of our children properly from the very beginning. As Srila Prabhupada wanted, in Bhagavad Gita, he writes in 16th chapter, the first purport, he writes that if you want a child of a godly qualities, you should perform the 10 samskaras. So as a parent, that's one way how you can help your child even before the child is born. And after that, take care. See that he is in proper association. Have proper influence on him. When the child is in the womb, then reading Bhagavad Gita, reciting shlokas, this is all beneficial because the child is conscious. So as a parent, that's what you can do. And then, when we have the children, then giving proper education. Not a slaughterhouse education. That's what actually benefits the children. So if we want to do that, then following these instructions of Srila Prabhupada, then we are free to do it. If we desire, we can do. If we desire something else, we will do something else. But we cannot, you know, wrap it up and say, this is what Srila Prabhupada wanted. We have to study Srila Prabhupada's books to actually know what he wanted. And we should not talk nonsense saying that actually he wanted something else. We cannot make a philosophy out of, you know, our own philosophy, you know, using Srila Prabhupada's books. No, it's your own thing, your own desire. Just don't confuse others. That's what you want to do. Following, you know, instead of four regulative principles, then okay, following 3.5 or 3 or 2. No, it's okay. It's not okay. In another initiation lecture, Srila Prabhupada gave, if you want to take initiation, yes, you are welcome. But you have to follow the four regulative principles. If you don't follow the four regulative principles, I cannot give you protection. That's what Srila Prabhupada says. So, you breaking the rules, the contract between the guru and disciple is broken. The guru is not obliged to give you protection. So, that's how serious it is. So therefore the association is so important. Okay, having got too much over. Maybe one question, anybody?
Hare Krishna, thank you, Guruji. In this regard, I am asking the question. Krishna is explaining Bhagavad Gita, apiche sudracharo bhajate mam manirbhar. And Prabhupada is explaining, by accident, a devotee falls down, then that contract is not broken in that situation. Because devotee laments for his wrongdoings.
Yes, see, if the devotee falls down, and it was an accident, and he actually, you know, desires to perform devotional service, Krishna doesn't see it as anything wrong. The devotee will gain the same position, he will be, you know, in the same situation, and there is no fault from Krishna's side. And devotees also should not see fault on that. But if a devotee points out, oh, he's a fallen, even though, you know, he is actually endeavoring, you know, to come back to the platform of devotional service, and it was just an accident. So the devotee who criticized such a devotee, he falls down. And as explained in Bhagavad Gita, is explained by Haridas Thakur in Harinam Chintamani. So many places we have to be very careful. Criticizing Vaishnavas is a great offense. Criticizing, no, or offending Guru is the greatest offense. So we should be very, very careful. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Nitai Gaur Paramananda.